Hey there, this is Richard from sunny Fullerton, California, and you're listening to Barca Talk.
Hey everybody, Brian here. Welcome to Barca Talk. As usual, I'm in the Barca Talk studio, aka my living room, in Buffalo, New York, and joining me from Barca Talk correspondent headquarters in Madrid, Spain, is Gabriel Quiroga. Gabriel, what's new?
Not much, Brian. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. What's the... I guess you didn't get a whole lot of sleep last night.
I did not. The game here, the Clásico in Miami, was at 2 o'clock local time, 2 o'clock in the morning. So I was up late last night watching the match. I didn't get home till about 4:35 or so. But it was worth it. It was an entertaining match, which we're going to talk about. But yeah, I'm a little tired.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, that shows your commitment to Barca. Because you could have watched it online on replay.
I could have.
At a reasonable time. But you chose to stay up.
I could have, yeah. And my friend Luis, who's also a super fan here, he wouldn't have let me. So, yeah. So we watched it live and it was worth it.
Cool. So what did you think about our new little addition to the beginning of the show, our listener intro?
Yeah, I definitely like it. I like the intro. I think it's a good introduction to our Barca Talk to hopefully welcome some new fans and followers into the Barca Talk podcast world.
Yeah, I'm into it. Since gearing the show back up this month, we've gotten a lot of great responses and more new listeners. And truth be told, that was a friend of mine who called in this week. But we would really like to get all you listeners calling in and doing these intros for us. So the way to do it is real simple. Just call the voicemail line. That's 716-795-2853. And record our intro straight from your phone. The script is very straight ahead. Just tell us your name, where you're calling from, and introduce the show. This is Barca Talk. You're listening to Barca Talk, something like that. And throw in a little Visca el Barça if you want. Now, if you do not like calling phone numbers, you could also just record it on your smartphone and email it to us at barcatalkpod@gmail.com. So again, the phone number is 716-795-2853, and the email is barcatalkpod@gmail.com. All one word. Barca Talk Pod. We just recently changed the email address from what it used to be, so that's the current email address. Make sure to use that one. You got anything else to add before we kick things off?
No, I don't. Let's get this started.
Okay, let's start the show and do some Barca Talk. All right, now the first thing we have to talk about is something very important. It's been overshadowed by all the controversy surrounding Neymar, but it's a really important story that has been ignored. And of course, I'm talking about Mascherano's beard. That thing is a force to be reckoned with. I mean, every time I look at it, I think he looks kind of like in the movies when there's like a homeless guy who gets taken in by some do-gooder and they like shower him up and he's clean, but he still has the beard. Like, that's how Mascherano's beard looks, and I love it.
Yeah, when we were talking about this, I thought it was pretty funny. I mean, I, you know, when you mentioned it, and then last night when I was watching the game, I was like, man, his beard game is on point. Yeah, so he's been definitely growing that. You know, I don't know if it's going to give him more powers. I don't know if he's going to be faster, stronger, who knows. But yeah, that beard is something else. I'm pretty jealous because I can't grow a beard. It takes me maybe 3 weeks and I'll get nothing. So to see Mascherano's beard, I'm pretty jealous of it.
Yeah, see, I am, as you know, because we do this over Skype, I am a bearded man. And I've definitely had my moments. I remember one time I was in Chicago sitting by the lake with my girlfriend. Some dude just rolls by on a bike and he says, "That is a fine beard, sir." I'm like, "Yeah, thanks, man." So, like, I have an appreciation for beards, you know, from my own personal experience. And, you know, Suarez grew a beard out this summer also. And his is very, you know, trimmed and sleek. It's very much like him as a player. It's very close to his face. It's groomed. But Mascherano, he just let it go.
Yeah.
And I think it's totally good for what he does, you know, being a defender, being a center back, he just wants to look intimidating, and he does, and I love it.
Exactly, especially with that clean, Bic-shaved head of his now with that beard. I mean, it's just got it going on now. It's definitely intimidating for sure.
Yeah, the beard, the scraggly beard with the shaved head is an incredible look. But okay, so we got that out of the way, and it was very important that we talk about that. But really, now there are some things happening or close to happening that we should talk about. So early last week, I got a message from you that said we had signed Coutinho, and you were it's hard to figure out tone in a text message, but it seemed like you were nonplussed by that.
Well, no, I was fine with the signing. I had been off Twitter for about 2 hours or something, and then all of a sudden it just like blew up about the Coutinho thing. So I was just more about like just surprised how quickly it came together. Obviously, it's not official. Like just before we started recording, I was on Twitter just checking out the news and stuff, and it's just, you know, I just want this transfer window to end. I just can't take this anymore. I just want my team to be finalized. I don't like having these doubts, you know. I think Coutinho would be a good addition to the team. If to replace Neymar, if Neymar goes. What do you think about Coutinho? Do you like his game? Do you know anything about him?
I don't really know anything about him is the thing. You know, I have to admit, there was a time when I was watching a lot of football, and being now in a PhD program, I'm really busy with a lot of other things. So all I watch is Barcelona. So no, I don't really know Coutinho. I figure if he's a hot commodity and Liverpool doesn't want to let him go, and he's playing for Liverpool anyway, he's got to be solid.
Yeah, I mean, he's a solid midfielder for sure. He's been at Liverpool for I think the last 4 or 5 years. He's Brazilian. What I like about his game is he's tough. He's a tough kind of, you know, Brazilians usually have the reputation of kind of being soft, a lot of flair, obviously, but he's got a little toughness to him, which I really like. He's also just the basically the heart and soul of their attack in Liverpool. So everything kind of goes through him. Obviously, if he came to Barcelona, he would obviously replace Neymar on the left side. I think he would be a pretty good link up with obviously Messi and Suarez. But I mean, he's no Neymar. And like we're going to talk about the Clásico last night, Neymar was something special last night.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, okay, so the fact is, at the moment, Coutinho has not been signed. Of course, his name has been mentioned in the press, but President Bartomeu was, I think, characteristically coy about it, because he was speaking with ESPN right ahead of the Clásico in Miami. And most of the interview, of course, revolved around Neymar. But when asked about Coutinho, he said, "He's a Liverpool player, and I have a lot of respect for Liverpool. What we do in the summer is be very discreet about everything." I don't know about that. But he said, so we can't confirm or deny anything. But he did say that there would be more new signings, whether Neymar stays or goes. Either way, there are going to be more new signings, definitely in the midfield, Bartomeu said. So that's what we have to look forward to. And as I think about the whole lineup, with more shoring up and fortification in the midfield, I think it lines up with what we're seeing on the pitch and what Valverde wants to do, which is play through the midfield at a level that we haven't seen in a few years.
And this is the other thing too with football, international football, is you know, in the States with basketball and NFL and stuff, the reporters have really good inside information. They're really close to the sources, and they usually get it right. So when something comes out on Twitter with NFL or NBA news, they're pretty spot on. Well, the opposites in international football, they're not that close to the team. They don't have sources like they do in the US. So all the Twitter rumors and everything are just rumors and just things. So like, you know, with the Coutinho thing, with Verratti and all this stuff. And obviously Bartomeu can't really say anything, but like I was talking with my friend Luis this morning about the position of, you know, selling Neymar for the money and then getting Coutinho and Verratti. Yeah, on paper it sounds great, but like, do you have confidence that the board can pull something off like that? Like, I don't feel like they're that forward thinking. They don't really have a plan B. Maybe they have a plan A, and maybe if this kind of goes, but this doesn't feel like anything's very well thought out, you know?
Yeah, well, it does seem really chaotic or disorganized. You know, they have their politician faces on, right? So it seems like they have pretty much everything under control. But when you look at what's actually happening, it seems like a real mess.
Yeah, I mean, and the other thing too is that, like, I was reading an article about the Real Madrid policy that they changed a couple of years ago of signing players. And you know, with Real Madrid, Florentino Perez is the ultimate stop, right? Like whatever he wants, he's going to get. And you know, and if he has a bad player, it's on him. If he has a great player, it's on him. But you know, he's almost like a dictator that way. But like we talked about in the previous episode, that they've been signing all these young players and really, really top young players. And we don't have anything in the pipeline. We're the opposite. We don't really have anything to be really excited about the future of the youth. Last night in the Clásico, you saw Real Madrid's, they unveiled their players, and there's like, they had Kovacic, that guy's like 23 years old, 24 years old. And then they have, you know, Ceballos, they have this other guy, and the future's bright for them. Whereas us, we have everything hinged on Messi. And that, for me, you know, obviously if Messi goes down, or, you know, Messi's not going to play at this level forever. And so we always have to have something in the pipeline ready in the future. And we just don't have that. We don't have that forward thinking. I can't believe I'm about to say this, but like Real Madrid is being more forward thinking than Barcelona is, especially with their signings and the way they're moving their team. Their team is young, fast, strong, and they're going to give Barca a run for the next, obviously, 6 years on everything, you know? And what's Barca going to do? That's you know, that's what scares me a little bit.
Well, they can't just keep throwing money at the problem. And I think, like, that's something that people have been saying for a while. You know, you can't just every year keep buying bigger and bigger players. And, you know, and that's not a long-term strategy. That's really more of a supplemental thing, a stopgap thing. And it goes back to what a lot of people have been saying for a couple of years at least now, that the youth system, the feeding into the first team from La Masia through Barça B is just not working. It's not working out right now. At the same time, though, I guess Xabi said something about this recently, and Bartomeu sort of shot back and said, you know, well, it's because of players like Xabi and Iniesta and Messi who have been on the first team for 15, 16 years, you know, whatever, a long time. That's a lot of time that there were young players coming up who couldn't get on the field because they were already on the field. But honestly, I think that's a total cop-out. I mean, yeah, sure, if you have your starting lineup, you have your stalwarts, you have your old school guys, they're your main guys. And if you have a great player who's coming up through the youth system, who's not going to be able to get to play, you know, let them go and like pursue their career somewhere else. But you have to just keep that consistent conveyor belt of great talent, great players coming through the system, so that when those players are ready to leave, you can phase them out and phase in the new guys. And you see like little shades of that, but it's like you're saying, there isn't a long-term plan right now.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that they're not loaning out their Barca B players to teams to get more experience. And that's what they need to do. They just need to loan them out to La Liga teams and just let them thrive. Let them sink or swim, you know, because that's how you're going to find out if they're going to be on Barcelona future. And if they're not, you just sell them. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. You know, that's what Real Madrid is doing. They are investing all their money into players under 24 years old. So all their signings this summer have been pretty much all under 24. And hopefully when their policy is, you know, they get 5 years out of them, they can still sell them when they're under 30 and still make a hell of a money getting that on the transfer fee. That's what they did with Ozil. That's what they did with Di Maria. And, you know, that's how they're able to get this, the French guy that they're looking at, Mbappe. I mean, this guy is going to be like the new Thierry Henry. And if they get him, look out. I mean, we are, you know, if they get that signing, like I was talking with my buddy, if they get that signing, we are screwed.
Yeah. Yeah, it sure would seem that way. Well, I think I want to clarify something you said. I don't want anyone to think that you're feeling envious of Real Madrid, but you're recognizing that they have, at the moment, a better plan, like a real plan for the future that, objectively speaking, has, you know, more potential in it. And we just wish that Barca was doing that. We're not envious.
Exactly. I mean, that's the thing. It's just like my basketball team that I follow are the Warriors, and I've talked about it before, that the way they do business now, the way they've changed everything, the way they're forward thinking. It's something that other teams are really envious. And so that's what I hoped that Barca could be. And that's what they used to be like when they had Pep Guardiola and La Maiza players and all that stuff. But ever since Pep left, we have been searching for a plan, and we've had different presidents. And it's just, you know, now that I see Real Madrid and just see the potential that they have, and that they're going to continue, you know, they're going to be strong. And Zidane knows how to use his bench, you know, and those players are going to get a lot of experience. So, yes, I'm not envious, but I just wish Barca just had some sort of definite plan.
Yeah, well, I don't know if Valverde is going to have as much influence as we might like on that. I mean, because I look at Valverde and I think, here's a guy who has a lot of the same ideas that you and I are talking about, that a lot of fans have, about having this long-term plan and really maintaining the core values of Barcelona when it comes to the La Masia and the B team leading up to the first team. Of course, not everyone is going to be able to make it to the first team, but really trying to, you know, make good players and keep that conveyor line going. It seems like Valverde is much more interested in bringing up those youth players, bringing up the B players. And if he's here for at least a few years, which he will be, assuming things go well, then he might be able to influence the board to sort of change their tactic a little bit or change their strategy. But if they're not paying attention, if that's what he wants, and whether or not the board is paying attention, you know, who knows? Basically, though, what you're saying, I totally agree, is if the board keeps going the way they're going, they're going to get voted out.
Exactly. And, you know, this is the thing, is that if Valverde was still in Bilbao, let's say, right, he has so much control in the club. He knows, you know, he's in charge of the development team, and he's interested because he knows he's going to be there for a long time, right? And so he needs to see, okay, this player's coming up. Okay, I can do this. But in Barcelona, he's just trying to survive, right? He's just trying to stay for the 3 years, try to be successful. Like, his goals are not to try to develop and try to bring players. His goal is to try to win, be successful, get the best out of the team, and just that. When you're on a lower team, the manager is definitely more invested, you know, wants to have his hand in the development and all the stuff of the lower tier team. But in a club like Madrid and Barca, like, they are just trying to survive those 3 years because there's so much stress involved. The last thing they need is to worry about Barca B. And that's why they need a good, right, you know, you need a good a sporting director that's looking out for the club and concerned about the Barca B as well as the main team. So,
yeah. Well, you know, this is going to be, it has been, and it's going to continue to be an ongoing conversation. So let's step away from that for now. I think we've covered most of the main points. I want to get into this Neymar thing again, regretfully, because we have to talk about Neymar and we can't avoid it. But I have to say, it's at this point, it's the kind of story that has become so comically absurd at this point. I mean, even one writer for Sport in an opinion piece said that it's become farcical. That I don't even really want to talk about it until something actually happens. Either he stays, he goes, or even if he were to actually just say something, then I would feel better about getting into it. But we can't help but talk about it, really. So I want to talk about one specific thing that, given the circumstances, seemed like a big deal, though it might not have been, but at least it actually happened, and the fact that it happened was confirmed by video. So in training last week, Neymar and the new signing, Nelson Semedo, got into a little spat in training, and there's video of this. Semedo came in for a tackle, and apparently he came in a little hard for Neymar's tastes, so Ney got in Semedo's face. And then Semedo walked away immediately, just trying to defuse things. But Neymar wasn't having it. He at least gestured like he was going after him. And then Busquets pulls him back. And then Neymar storms off, left training for the day. So talking about this in a press conference in Miami and the whole lead up to the Clásico, Iniesta said that, like, because of this situation and what's being said about Ney, which is worldwide, it has much more significance. But for those of us who are training, it's nothing. So are things like this common in training sessions? Are we trying, or is the press trying to, I guess we are the press, but is the other press trying to blow it out of proportion because there's such a huge question mark over Neymar's head right now? I mean, how common are things like this in training, do you think?
I think it's very common. And I just think that since it was caught on film, you know, it's a bigger deal, especially with all the rumors and so forth. I mean, I just think he's just stressed out, obviously, about the situation. You know, we talked last week after the PK Instagram thing. I believed for maybe 2 days that he was going to stay, but especially after watching the sports show today, like, he went to China. today after the game by himself. And so what they're speculating is, like, you know, last night's game was the last game he's going to play. And after he's done with China, he's going straight to Paris. And I'm kind of tending to believe that more, just by body language, just by what I've been seeing, especially after the sports show today. They had about 12 to 15 minutes just on the Neymar situation, a video from the game, before the game, after the game, when he got subbed off, when he was talking to the Brazilian players from Real Madrid, all these things. It was crazy. It was just like all this crazy insight that, you know, you just, and the way he was talking with Marcelo and Casemiro, it seemed like, if I was just looking from the outside, that he was telling them that he's leaving. And so that for me is just, you know, I think he's leaving. So again, like we talked about, I just want it to be finalized, just go or stay. You know, I need to, like, find out who is going to be our team this year and go forward.
Right. And especially if Neymar is going to be gone, then that's a significant issue to deal with. And, you know, Valverde also wants to have the squad finalized as soon as possible. He even, I guess, publicly said that he would like for the squad to be finalized by August 7th, which is really early.
Yeah.
The transfer window is open until September 1st, so it's not likely that he's going to have his wish, but he's at least said he wants to know who his team is so that he can plan for the Super Cup.
Yeah, if you bring in some more players, great, but I think just the question of the Neymar thing, I mean, because that's really, you know, all that you're really caring about, because, you know, you could potentially replace Neymar in the short term, you know, for the Super Cup with Alcácer or another Sergio Roberto or something like this. But obviously Valverde wants, you know, he wants to have the team finalized, but again, it's out of his hands, especially since they're waiting for PSG to come up with this money, this loot to get Neymar.
Yeah. And apparently they're going to report PSG to UEFA if they do come up with it, because they're going to say that, like, they've already said, we can't imagine where they would get all that money. So if they come up with it, we're just going to report them and ask for an investigation as to the source of it to make sure that they're operating within the financial fair play rules.
Exactly. I mean, it's just that Qatari money, you know, they just, you know, PK said it best. Basically, it's just between two things, money or trophies. Right. Because that's
right.
I mean, PSG, yeah, they could potentially be a runner for the Champions League. But I would take Barca, Madrid, or, you know, or Bayern Munich over PSG. That's my feeling.
Yeah. Even with the signings that they've made.
I mean, being on Barca, I just think that helps his brand more. But obviously he thinks being by himself is going to help his brand. So,
yeah. And it's a real shame that he's, well, I don't know. From my perspective, I'd prefer that he wasn't so concerned with his brand as much as with the club.
Exactly. And how much more do you need? You know, especially when you're in the 100 millions, you know, what's another three? Like, he's going to China right now to do a thing, and I think he's getting like another 5 million or something. I'm just like, good God, he's going for one day for this appearance, you know? I've been reading on Twitter. There's a really good a woman who does writing for Barca. Her name is Diane Christine. She had like a nice little piece about her opinion about the Neymar thing, and I'll post it on the website and stuff, but it was a really good opinion piece about what she thought about the whole thing, and she felt that Neymar was leaving too. I mean, especially since Neymar hasn't said anything, like, that just adds, you know, like the whole speculation. I mean, I just feel like he's leaving now. So
yeah, normally silence is kind of like a form of admission, because if he wasn't going, he probably would have said so by now. Probably more than likely the next time we come out with a show, we'll be talking about what's going to happen on the left side.
Exactly. And we'll be like, oh, Sergio Roberto, Alcácer, or whatever. But what I've seen so far with Valverde, I'm excited that we have a tactical manager that is already shown in the last three games, even though they're preseason, that we're heading in the right direction with what we have.
Yeah, absolutely. There's the whistle, and you know what that means. That's the end of the first half, and this is the halftime portion of the show. In the second half, we'll get into the actual football, looking back at the last two games in the U.S. and looking ahead to the Super Cup. So speaking of halftime shows, Gabriel, how about Mark Anthony in Miami, huh?
Yeah, I mean, like, we were just talking about that. It's just, you know, we can't ever have in these big matches, like, just silence. We always have to have a music accompaniment with something, right? So
in America,
when I was exactly, and so when I was watching the game last night, I was watching with my friend, and he was like, yeah, they're gonna have like a halftime show. And I was like, are you kidding me? I was like, who did they get? He's like, Mark Anthony. I was like, oh gosh, this is like the most Miami thing ever, right? So especially since it's being played in Miami, a little salsa music. But I mean, it was fine. I don't mind Mark Anthony at all, but I just, you know, use halftime to like go get a drink, go to the bathroom. I don't need to keep watching TV all the time.
Yeah, and I don't need to get it. If I'm at the stadium also, like I just want to relax for 15 minutes because like I watch the game pretty closely. I don't want another show to happen for me to either watch or not watch, something I have to worry about ignoring. Just let me chill out.
Exactly. And here in Spain, what they do in halftime when Champions Leagues or anything like this is on the local TV, they just do all advertisements the whole time. And I kind of didn't like that at first because I wanted a little analysis, but actually I don't mind it because then it's just, you know the game's not starting. And then when you actually see the game's ready to go and you're ready to go.
Yeah, there's a lot of confusion like with the way they cover soccer here in the States. There's often a lot of confusion because they'll be doing replays and analysis. And, you know, if you look away for a minute because it's halftime and you look back and you see playing happening, you're like, oh, did the second half start? Oh, no. Okay, that's a replay. Never mind. It's better, actually. I think, yeah, might as well just wallpaper the whole thing with just advertising.
And that's what they do for 15 straight minutes.
I'm for it. Well, okay, so as far as our own halftime business is concerned, I wanted to talk about a couple of social media things relating to the show. So one thing I really like about working with you, Gabriel, is I don't like Twitter. I really do not like Twitter. But you're a lot better at it than I am, and you're on it a lot. You actually like Twitter. So I just leave the whole Twitter aspect of the Barca Talk social media campaign to you. So, but I'm just, since I don't look at it, why don't you tell me and our listeners what is our Twitter activity like? What do we do there?
So our Twitter activity right now is just publishing articles that I think are interesting for Barca fans. But I mainly use Twitter just to follow insiders on any sport that I follow. And I just really like it because, you know, you get different perspectives, you get journalists, they link to their articles, so you get them when they're freshly written. But also, I love watching a game and on Twitter at the same time. I love seeing reactions and seeing how different people react to different things. For me, that is like watching with a bunch of people, and you just, especially when something spectacular happens and you get the reaction, I just think it's a great way to watch the game. So that's how I watch Twitter. More and more, we're going to put more posts. And obviously, when I'm during the season, I'm going to post more pictures as well as on Instagram, which you're going to talk about.
Yeah, I personally like Instagram. I enjoy it. I like sharing photos. And sometimes I'll do some Photoshop-y or some video edit type things and sharing those. But just in the same way that we want to hear your voices on the show, we also want to get involved with you on Instagram. So you could follow us on Twitter also, but definitely follow us on Instagram as well. Our username is Barca Talk Pod. And just tag us in any of your fan posts. You know, if you've got you in your Barca jersey, whatever, go ahead and give us a tag and we'll repost it on our Instagram. So it's not just us generating stuff, but we're sharing and engaging with the listeners in the community. And the important thing to keep in mind is that all of this social media is great, and it adds a different dimension and adds different ways that we can interact with the listeners. But at the end of the day, it's really all about this right here, what's coming into your ears. So give us a call, 716-795-2853, and record a show intro for us, or tell us anything you want. We were joking earlier about Mascherano's beard. What do you got? Give us your best Mascherano beard zinger, right? Give us your best Mascherano beard jokes. And finally, I would not be doing my duty if I didn't ask you to give us a rating or review in the iTunes store. At this point, we've put out a good number of shows. We've gotten some good reviews. And if you search the iTunes store for just FC Barcelona in the podcast area, the results page is filled with our episodes. So that's great. But more ratings and reviews will help the show grow even more. And just tell your friends about it. Share it. We really appreciate that. You got anything else, Gabe, before we start the second half?
Nope. Let's get started with the second half.
Okay, let's do it. Start the second half. Now, Now, since our last show, Barca has played two games, finishing up the International Champions Cup in the U.S. Of course, the grand finale being the Clásico in Miami. But before that, they played Manchester United in Washington, D.C., winning 1-0 with a goal from Neymar. So let's talk about that match. What are your initial thoughts?
Well, first, I just watched the highlights. I didn't watch the full match. But what I saw, I liked. You know, with the match against Madrid, Manchester United, and of course the first game they played against, I forget right now off the top of my head.
Juventus.
But Juventus, they have started really strong, pushing the tempo, you know, trying to get the ball back, and that's what they did with the Manchester United game. You know, like I have been really impressed with what Valverde's been able to get from Rakitic, Messi, Suarez, even Neymar. They just look, like we talked about before, they just look so much more organized. They know what they have to do. And for example, when they're getting pressed by the other team, they know exactly how to counter that more cleanly. And so that's been helping a lot. Like they have better outlets. They've been able to counter more. And so I've been impressed so far with what Valverde has been able to get. I know it's just preseason, but still it's a good momentum for the Super Cup that's coming up.
Yeah, it is noticeable what he's getting out of these players that you mentioned. The thing that I was really looking at, I watched the whole game. I mean, it wasn't a very exciting game, to be honest, because United weren't exactly bringing it the way that Barca were. But in any case, what I was really looking at was just, I don't know, how much time the ball was on the ground. So Barcelona was playing the ball on the ground a lot more than the last few seasons under Luis Enrique. And of course, when you have Suarez on the field, you're always going to be able to threaten a more direct play, you know, across in. But I was personally really encouraged by how much one-touch passing in small spaces I was seeing, and so much rotation in the midfield and the forward lines. You know, you never totally knew where Rakitic, Alenia, even Busquets would be. You know, normally Busquets in the last few years, he's been really anchored in that central spot, playing the defensive sort of distributive role, which is great. But he's been a lot more mobile lately, and all of that goes for Messi, Suarez, and Neymar too. There is you can't predict where any of them are going to be. So much more movement and rotation on the field, and all that beautiful one touch, you know, old school tiki taka passing. It's beautiful to see, and in its own way, effective.
Yeah, and the thing too is that I always, you know, anytime we play in a neutral field with good weather against an English team, we will dominate possession. We are so technically superior to them. It's just our style, our technical ability is just flawless. On a neutral field with good weather, we can just do that. You know, Manchester United, like, who, I don't know, does anyone really scare you or anything like that? Maybe Pogba on the other team. But they don't have the chemistry, the passing chemistry that Barca has, you know, with Messi, Iniesta, and all that. And you, like you said, they are just tiki-taking all over the pitch. Manchester United don't know what to do. They just look lost. And they had a couple opportunities, but really they didn't really threaten that much as compared to Barcelona. They had a couple opportunities that they flubbed on. But, you know, overall, we take in these preseason games, we're trying to look for the organization. We're trying to see how quickly they can adapt to Valverde's system. And so far, they've been looking all good.
Yeah, well, it seems like Valverde's system is just like a more formalized, a little bit more regimented in a way. But it's also a lot of return to form for a lot of the players who have been around long enough to remember the Guardiola years. It's because it's looking more like a Guardiola kind of situation. It's not exactly the same. Valverde, you know, has his own ideas. And he's not the same guy. He's, you know, he has different, there are differences between them, but it just looks a lot similar. And one, I think that it is a way to win games. It is an effective tactic and an effective strategy, but also it's just so beautiful. It's so beautiful to watch how it's like improvised ballet with a soccer ball.
Yeah, exactly. You know, if you ever get the chance to watch them warm up before a match, it's incredible. Every time I've been to watch them live, I'm always just amazed the way, just the before the match, they do the keep away drills, and then like they'll do the long passing, and the way they just stop the ball pass, it's incredible. It's incredible, especially since, like, you know, I have an idea of the type of player I was. I was a player that I never wanted to make crazy mistakes. I wanted to be flawless with my passing as much as possible. And then when I see them do what they do, especially in the match, like especially last night or against Manchester United, they just make them look so like amateur. It's crazy how they do it. They know exactly where to move after they pass. It's insane. And, you know, obviously that's been raised ever since they were youths. But going back to this Valverde thing, which we'll go into the Clasico, you know, so the Manchester United, I saw the lineup and it was more of a 4-3-3 setup. But last night on the TV here in Spain, they showed up the lineup and it was more of a 4-2-3-1 setup. And so I think in the more important games, I think Valverde is going to go more to the 4-2-3-1 because like last night was a quote unquote important game. So for that, I'm pretty excited that there's going to be some flexibility in the tactics.
Now, so what are the, because it was a very much the same lineup as you would see playing a 4-3-3. What would be like the tactical differences between a 4-3-3 and a 4-2-3-1?
So there's two main differences. So the first one is Messi's in the center. And Messi was in the center last night, making the passes, the runs. I mean, how many times did Messi have, you know, when he scored the goal or he, and you're playing through Suarez. So you can play outlet on counters with Neymar to the side. Suarez goes up the middle and then you have Messi in the middle as well. So that helps. But then also it solidifies the defense because then you have Iniesta and Busquets on the back. Iniesta has a little bit of flexibility to go up and down, but Busquets stays more hunkered down. But also it's just like, Rakitic looks so much different now. He just looks so solid. Like, you know, he had the goal last night in the Clasico, but also he just looks so confident and he's making right passes. He's not being hung out to dry like he was last year when Messi would avoid that area. I mean, Rakitic had to cover so much ground last year and he was exposed. And now he has shorter distance to cover. He's making the right passes. He's scoring goals. You can just tell. And if that's solidified, then we'll be so much better off because then we don't leave our defense exposed like we did last year so many times.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we've kind of already just slipped into talking about the Clasico because, of course, that's the more interesting game to talk about. I had one main thought about the whole event, just the fact that it is sort of like the main event, the capping off event of this International Champions Cup and, you know, this whole U.S. tour thing. And I was thinking about how whenever those two sides play, it's even if it's quote-unquote a friendly, it's not really a friendly. They can't ever just be friendly. I mean, they might pull some punches because in the end, they're all professionals and nobody wants to risk injury to themselves or others out of professional courtesy in a game with stakes so low. But they still want to put on a good show. But what struck me watching it was how there is actually something very much at stake in that game, or there was. And what it is, it's more intangible, but what it is it's market share in the U.S., right? In the Galacticos era at Real Madrid, they made a lot of serious inroads into the U.S. market. And as a result, I personally find that there are more Madridistas in the U.S. than there are culés. But we know that Barca is making a big push to get more goodwill in the U.S. And I feel like if there was one thing that they were actually competing over on Saturday night, it was the undecided, the neutral American football fan to like get some allegiance going.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I definitely think that they were aiming for that market share. It was, you know, at the beginning of the game, it was quite obvious that Barcelona was ready to play and Madrid was kind of taking it easy. Obviously, after a couple tackles, it became quite a good match, you know, especially the first half. There was four goals. It was a lot of back and forth. Barcelona dominated the possession for the most part, which was great to see. Neymar was spectacular. You know, I was commenting with my friend last night. I said, you know, Neymar loses the ball like 8 times out of 10 trying to do like the most amazing move. But then when he makes that most amazing move and you score a goal, like it's just, you're just in awe. And so that's what that's what you get with Neymar. But again, you're right. They were trying to compete for the market share. From what I saw on the TV, it kind of looked obviously a lot split, you know, 50-50 going, you know, a lot of Barcelona fans, obviously a lot of Madrid fans. So it's interesting to see, you know, I think it's a great idea. I think it was a great event, especially the game turned out really well. So I think everyone kind of won you know, won the night, basically. It was a great game. Everyone looked like they had a great time watching the game. I was talking with my dad. My dad watched the game. He thought it was going to be a boring game, but he enjoyed it. So, you know, everyone, you know, from what I read in Twitter, too, everyone just enjoyed the game.
Yeah, it's the fans definitely won.
Yeah, I mean, and also the way, you know, the U.S. always puts on a show, you know, they were able to gain a lot of momentum going into the game with, you know, events beforehand with Neymar doing a Nike show, Messi with Adidas. They were able to, you know, really, really gain momentum. People paid a lot of money to go down there to go watch the game. Also, this helped because this is the new stadium unveiling too as well. I mean, it was just a lot of like the perfect storm. And I think for both teams, you know, both teams are really happy and pleased with the outcome.
Yeah, I'd say so. I do want to point out just one moment that was somehow important to me. And I want to try and talk through why that was. So there was this one exchange in the second half between Neymar and Jordi Alba. And they were just checking the ball back and forth to each other, I think three times, maybe even four, before Jordi made the run down the line. And Neymar found him. He put it through to him. And personally, I love seeing that kind of thing. But I often get the sense that a lot of Americans don't understand what that's about. And in this case, the play got broken up. You know, the defender sort of dispossessed Jordi of the ball. But in the last few years, it seems like they've been more concerned, Barca has, more concerned with circulating the ball over a large area. They haven't been checking the ball as much in a small area. But I remember maybe 5-6 years ago, you know, you'd see Xavi and Busquets check the ball back and forth 5-6 times, and then suddenly something would appear out of that. You know, someone would make a run, they would get into some open space, and then something came out of it. So I think there's something when you see it that it seems somehow like stalling, or it seems like inefficient or unproductive. I don't know. When I see it, I think it shows just a lot of patience and a kind of like that old school, like probing way of playing where, you know, we're not going to be pushed around and we're not just going to circulate the ball and hope for something. Like if we see something that could develop, like we'll stay in here. And I feel like it's actually a good tactic. And I pointed that out to a couple of my friends who I was watching with. And I said, you see that kind of thing, that's actually a very, for my money, a really good little tactic. It's a very local strategy, but I think it's great. And I want to see more of that this season. Do you have, you know, this specific thing I'm talking about?
Yeah. And it goes down to also, you have to know where they are in the field. If they're in the middle third, you know, none of the players are going to be really doing a lot of diagonal runs or through runs or anything like that. They're just trying to inch closer to the goal, right? So that's what they're trying to do. So Busquets and Iniesta are just pinging it back and forth, but they're constantly moving forward by a little bit, little bit, little bit. When they're in the last third and they're still pinging around, that's where all the runs come in. That's when the overlaps, the throughs, the over the top, these type of things. And so it just really depends where they are on the field. But yeah, I mean, that's really, I mean, possessing the ball like the way they do is so hard to do. Everyone that's played, they know you try so hard. You're like, okay, I'm just going to pass it backwards. We're going to keep it. But you know, there's always a moment after maybe the fifth pass that you either lose the ball or because of pressure. And these people are professional footballers. So the other team are just as good, especially with Real Madrid last night. They know exactly what Barcelona is going to do and they know how to counter it. But the way they just pass and dance with each other that way is still, I can't get enough of. I mean, that's, you know, this is one of the reasons why I love Barca, is just the way they do that. They toy with the other team. And yeah, like you said, they ping it, they see all the runs, and they're always inching closer to the third, right? And once they get to the third, they have that flexibility, that independence where they can do their own flair. That's where Messi comes up with these great plays. Neymar, Alba does the overlap. You have all these things happening. And as a defender, you have so many things coming at. You have to be so disciplined, and that you just need one mental breakdown and you got a goal for Barca.
Yeah. Okay. So now what do you think about how this friendly, quote unquote, has to tell us about what we're going to see in the Super Cup tie? So that's a two match tie coming up in Spain on the, in mid August.
Yeah. So I think it's just more of the same that we've been seeing in the Clásicos, that Madrid is going to focus on the counters. That's how they scored their two goals. They're fast, so that's how they focus against Barcelona. They'll press. I think Barcelona is going to hopefully maybe have some other tricks up their sleeve. Obviously, they're not showing everything in the preseason. But I think going forward, I definitely have more confidence going forward, especially if Messi's playing the center role. It's so hard for Ramos and Varane to cover him, because if he can get through one of them, then all of a sudden you have Suarez there. It's game over. I mean, Messi through the middle puts so much pressure on the defense that you have everyone focus on Messi, and Messi can slip a ball. So I think going forward, I'm super excited for the Super Cup. It's going to be amazing because it's two Clásicos within like 3 days of each other. It's a home and away. It's going to be great. I'm really, really excited. And today when I was watching the sports, they're already doing a countdown.
Oh yeah. Cause I mean, it's not often that you actually get to kick off the official competitive season with two Clásicos inside of a week.
Exactly. Like the last time I think was like 4 years ago, I think it was when something like that, but they're already starting a countdown. And it's going to be kind of interesting because right now Madrid is a ghost town. Like I was telling you before we recorded, that everyone's gone on vacation. So Madrid is going to be a little quiet. And since Barcelona is a beach town, there's going to be a lot of people in Barcelona. So it'll be interesting to see how that, with the bars here, because most of the bars are going to be closed for August. We'll see how that plays into any of the matches. And also, the Super Cup doesn't really mean anything. Like, I mean, it's nice if we win, but at the same time, it's not, you're basically just saying, okay, we beat you, Madrid. We have this little cup. You know, that's basically what it is.
Right, right. Now, do you think you're going to be able to get into the game in Madrid since there's nobody around?
I mean, I could go, I probably won't. I just prefer to watch it on the TV and probably watch it at a bar. But it's interesting. I'll definitely look into it. I didn't even think of it. It'll probably be cheaper too, because it's not really it's almost considered a preseason match. So we'll see. I'll look into it. Actually, I'll look into it.
Yeah, that would be cool. And you could do a report from the field. Just do it on your phone, right? And
exactly, definitely.
I'll clean up the audio. Okay, so final question about this. Who do you think is going to learn the lessons from this this Miami friendly better moving ahead into the Super Cup? Zidane or Valverde?
I mean, I definitely think Valverde. Zidane, Madrid is, they're just going through the motions right now. They'll be ready for the season. But when you're a new manager, it's important to only get some momentum going into the season, which they've done. It looks like the players are happy with the system. You can just see the way they've been playing. And I just think that Valverde is just, he's an above average manager. So he's going to get quite a bit out of Barcelona. So like I said, I was talking with my dad and we were talking about this, and it's just like, we're excited about the season, especially going back to this pressing. They just look, renewed, and I guess maybe that's sometimes just natural when you have a new manager. You've had the Luis Enrique run. Probably you're just like bothered by it, the way he acts and stuff. And so just having a normal human, as a manager, it's just like a totally, I can talk to this guy, wow, this guy wants this from me. Wow. So you can see that, it's kind of like a renewed birth for the team. So
yeah, we're going to be really excited to watch the Super Cup. Well, that is it for this week. Thanks for listening. The news might compel us to do another one between now and the end of the Super Cup, but I think right now the plan is to hold off until the Super Cup has been played. And at that point, we at Barca Talk are going to be coming at you every week, every Monday, with more Barca Talk.
You can follow the podcast on our multiple social media channels, such as Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, which can all be found on our website, barcatalk.net. Also, if you know someone who loves Barca as much as we do, please share the show with them. Sharing is caring.
Yes, and also call the voicemail line. The number, again, is 716-795-2853. Give us an intro, chime in on anything you hear, or tell us what you'd like to hear. We'll do what we can. We'll see what we can do. One last time, the number is 716-795-2853. We will be back soon with another episode of Barca Talk. For now, I am Brian Henderson.
I am Gabriel Quiroga.
And thank you for listening.
Visca Barca.